Got a gun? He asked.
I don't hold with him.
Got a phone?
Disconnected. I want money. But I don't need them. Jeb lets me use his cell if I need it.
Good.
How the hell is that good? Jeb's not here.
That's exactly what's good about it. I'm going to break into your barn, and I don't want you calling the cops while I'm doing it. Or shooting me.
That's Jeb's barn. You can't go in there.
I don't see how you can stop me. He turned his back on her and continued down the track. It curved a little and led directly to the barn's double doors. The doors, like the barn itself, were built of old planks, alternately baked and rotted by 100 summers and 100 winters. Reacher touched them with his knuckles and felt a dry hollowness. The lock was brand new. It was a U-shaped bicycle lock, like the ones city messengers used. One leg of the U ran through 2 black steel hasps that were bolted through the planks of the doors. Reacher touched the lock, shook it. Heavy steel, warm from the sun. It was a pretty solid arrangement. No way of cutting it, no way of breaking it. But a lock was only as strong as what it was fixed to. Reacher grabbed the straight end of the lock at the bottom of the U, pulled on it gently, and then harder. The doors sagged toward him and stopped. He put the flat of his palm against the wood and pushed them back, held them closed with a straight left arm, and yanked on the lock with his right. The bolts gave a little, but not much. Reacher figured that Jeb must have used washers on the back under the nuts. Maybe big wide ones. They were spreading the load, he thought. Okay, more load. He held the straight part of the lock with both hands and leaned back like a water skier, pulled hard, and smashed his heel into the wood under the hasps. His legs were longer than his arms, so he was cramped, and the kick didn't carry much power, but it carried enough. The old wood splintered a little, and something gave 1/2 inch. He regrouped and tried it again. Something gave a little more. Then a plank in the left-hand door split completely, and 2 bolts pulled out. Reacher put his left hand flat on the door and got his right-hand fingers hooked in the gap with a backhand grip. He took a breath and counted to 3 and jerked hard. The last bolt fell out, and the whole lock assembly hit the ground and the doors sagged all the way open. Reacher stepped away and folded the doors back flush with the walls and let the sunlight in. He guessed he was expecting to see a meth lab, maybe with workbenches and beakers and scales and propane burners and piles of new baggies ready to receive the product, or else a big stash ready for onward distribution. He saw none of that. Bright light leaked in through long vertical gaps between warped planks. The barn was maybe 40 feet by 20 inside. It had a bare earth floor, swept and compacted. It was completely empty, except for a well-used pickup truck parked in the exact center of the space. The truck was a Chevy Silverado, several years old. It was light brown like fired clay. It was a working vehicle. It had been built down to a plain specification, a base model. Vinyl seats, steel wheels, undramatic tires. The load bed was clean but scratched and dented. It had no license plates. The doors were locked, and there was no sign of a key anywhere.
What's that?
Reacher turned and saw Jeb Oliver's mother behind him. She had her hand tight on the door jamb, like she was unwilling to cross the threshold. It's a truck.
I can see that.
Is it Jeb's?
I never saw it before.
What did he drive before that big red thing?
Not this.
Reacher stepped closer to the truck and peered in through the driver's side window. Manual shift. Dirt and grime, high mileage, but no trash. The truck had been someone's faithful servant, used but not abused.
I never saw it before,
the woman said again. It looked like it had been there for a long time. It was settled on soft tires. It didn't smell of oil or gasoline. It was cold, inert, filmed with dust. Reacher got on his knees and checked underneath. Nothing to see. Just a frame, caked with old dirt, clipped by rocks and gravel. How long has this thing been in here?
I don't know.
When did he put the lock on the door?
Maybe 2 months ago.
Reacher stood up again.
What did you expect to find?
The woman asked him. Reacher turned to face her and looked at her eyes. The pupils were huge. "More of what you had for breakfast?" She smiled.
"You thought Jeb was cooking in here?"
"Wasn't he?"
"His stepfather brings it by."
"You married?"
"Not anymore, but he still brings it by."
"Jeb was using on Monday night." The woman smiled again.
"A mother can share with her kid, can't she? What else is a mother for?"
Reacher turned away and looked at the truck one more time. "Why would he keep an old truck locked in here and a new truck out in the weather?"
"Beats me. Jeb always does things his own way."
Reacher backed out of the barn and walked each door closed. Then he used the balls of his thumbs to press the bolts back into their splintered holes. The weight of the lock dragged them all halfway out again. He got it looking as neat as he could, and then he left it alone and walked away.
"Is Jeb ever coming back?"
the woman called after him. Reacher didn't answer. The Mustang was facing north, so Reacher drove north. He put the CD player on loud and kept going 10 miles down a narrow straight road, aiming for a horizon that never arrived. Roskin dug his own grave with a Caterpillar backhoe. It was the same machine that had been used to level the Zex land. It had a 20-inch entrenching shovel with 4 steel teeth on it. The shovel took long, slow bites of the soft earth and laid them aside. The engine roared and slowed, and pulsed clouds of diesel exhaust filled the Indiana sky. Roskin had been born during the Soviet, and he had seen a lot. Afghanistan, Chechnya, unthinkable upheaval in Moscow. A guy in his position could have been dead many times over, and that fact, combined with his natural Russian fatalism, made him utterly indifferent to his fate. "Ukarsa," the Zek had said, an order from an absolute authority. "Nichevo," Roskin had said in reply. "Think nothing of it." So he worked the backhoe. He chose a spot concealed from the stone crusher's view by the bulk of the house. He dug a neat trench, 20 inches wide, 6 feet long, 6 feet deep. He piled the excavated earth to his right, to the east, like a high barrier between himself and home. When he was finished, he backed the machine away from the hole and shut it down, climbed down from the cab, and waited. There was no escape, no point in running. If he ran, they would find him anyway, and then he wouldn't need a grave. They would use garbage bags, 5 or 6 of them. They would use wire ties to seal the several parts of him into cold, black plastic. They would put bricks in with his flesh and throw the bags in the river. He had seen it happen before. In the distance, the Zek came out of his house. A short, wide man, ancient, stooped, walking at a moderate speed, exuding power and energy. He picked his way across the uneven ground, glancing down, glancing forward, 50 yards, 100. He came close to Roskin and stopped. He put his ruined hand in his pocket and came out with a small revolver, his thumb and the stump of his index finger pincered through the trigger guard. He held it out, and Roskin took it from him. "Ukarse," the Zek said. "Nichevo," Roskin replied, a short, amiable, self-deprecating sound like Dorian in French, like Denara in Spanish, like Prego in Italian. "Please, I'm yours to command." "Thank you," the Zek said. Roskin stepped away to the narrow end of the trench, opened the revolver's cylinder, and saw a single cartridge. Closed the cylinder again and turned it until it was lined up right. Then he pulled the hammer back and put the barrel in his mouth. He turned around so that he was facing the Zek and his back was to the trench. He shuffled backward until his heels were on the edge of the hole. He stood still and straight and balanced and composed, like an Olympic diver preparing for a difficult backward pike off the high board. He closed his eyes. He pulled the trigger. For a mile around, black crows rose noisily into the air. Blood and brain and bone arced through the sunlight in a perfect parabola. Raskin's body fell backward and landed stretched out and flat in the bottom of the trench. The crows settled back to earth, and the faint noise of the distant stone-crushing machines rolled back in and sounded like silence. Then the Zek clambered up into the Caterpillar's cab and started the engine. The levers all had knobs as big as pool balls, which made them easy to manipulate with his palms. Reacher stopped 15 miles north of the city and parked the Mustang on a big V-shaped gravel turnout made where the corners of two huge circular fields met. There were fields everywhere, north, south, east, and west, one after the other in endless ranks and files. Each one had its own irrigation boom. Each boom was turning at the same slow, patient pace. He shut the engine down and slid out of the seat. He stood and stretched and yawned. The air was full of mist from the booms. Up close, the booms were like massive industrial machines, like alien spaceships recently landed. There was a central vertical standpipe in the middle of each field, like a tall metal chimney. The boom arm came off it horizontally and bled water out of 100 spaced nozzles all along its length. At the outer end, the arm had a vertical leg supporting its weight. At the bottom of the leg was a wheel with a rubber tire. The wheel was as big as an airplane's landing gear. It rolled around a worn track, endlessly. Reacher watched and waited until the wheel in the nearest field came close. He walked over and stepped alongside it, kept pace with it. The tire came almost to his waist. The boom itself was way over his head. He kept the wheel on his right and tracked it through its long clockwise circle. He was walking through fine mist. It was cold. The boom hissed loudly. The wheel climbed gentle rises and rolled into low depressions. It was a long, long circle. The boom was maybe 150 feet long, which made the perimeter track more than 300 yards. Pi times diameter. Area was pi times the radius squared, which would therefore be more than 7,800 square yards. More than 1.5 acres, which meant that the wasted corners added up to a little less than 2,200 square yards, more than 21%, more than 500 square yards in each corner, like the shapes in the corners of a target. The Mustang was parked on one of the corners, proportionally the same size as a bullet hole, like one of Charlie's bullet holes in the corners of the paper. Reacher arrived back where he had started, a little wet, his boat shoes muddy. He stepped away from the circle and stood still on the gravel, facing west. On the far horizon, a cloud of crows rose suddenly and then settled. Reacher got back in the car and turned the ignition on, found the clamps on the header rail and the switch on the dash, and lowered the roof. He checked his watch. He had 2 hours until his rendezvous at Franklin's office. So he lay back in the seat and let the sun dry his clothes. He took the folded target out of his pocket and looked at it for a long time. He sniffed it, held it up to the sun, and let the light shine through the crisp, round holes. Then he put it away again in his pocket. He stared upward and saw nothing but sky. He closed his eyes against the glare and started to think about ego and motive, and illusion and reality and guilt and innocence, and the true nature of randomness.